All right. Good morning once again. It is June 16th, 2026. It's the day after my next older brother's birthday, and I only remembered to contact him after he was asleep last night, so I have to call him today. So thank you for reminding me. I will say, anybody who wants to support my retreat this week is invited to be supportive. It's unfortunate. I'm also, I will admit, spending more money than I need to because I want to stay in the place I want to stay, which is on the California coastline. Like if I had gone like inland, I could get a cheap Airbnb, but I sprung for the nice one up in Wallala, for those who know the coast. And then I'm gonna drive up there today, and then I'll start sitting pretty much tomorrow morning. And yeah, I mean the retreat isn't what I'm gonna talk about today, but I do want to talk about sort of what the mind. That's it. What was the other th there was something else I wanted to say too. I don't know. I know what I wanted to say. I'm grateful for this group. As I was like rushing this morning, and I had to go across town, like pick up a car and like get back here, and then I was like, oh, it's gonna be good to just like sit and talk and about the Dharma and meditate with people. And I mean, I already did sit this morning, but it's different having this community. So appreciate you guys showing up. And so let's start with the period of meditation. Everybody can hear me okay? Microphone's working. Good. All right. I kind of just wanted to take a little survey of those who are here. You know, it's interesting. I mean, there's a bunch of people I know here, but then there's a bunch of people I don't know you. And I don't do any sort of formal who's new or anything, but yeah, sometimes I'm like, that looks like a new name. So anyway, if you're new, if you're old, everyone is welcome. And maybe I'll ring a bell to start a little bit more formally here. And settling back into a comfortable upright posture if that's workable for you. You can also lie down or stand or even walk. If you're in such a posture, you can close your eyes. If you're driving, please do not close your eyes. And turning the attention just to the felt experience of the body, how your body is feeling right now. Or there may be particular sensations or an overall feeling, pleasant or unpleasant, energetic or lethargic. Or a variety of different sensations. Sometimes we have a lot of sensation in one area of the body and then very little or none detectable in another part. So just surveying the body to start. And your kind of intentionality to just relaxing. Not a dull kind of relaxing, but a releasing of tension in the body while the mind stays alert. And letting the attention then gather around the breath to feel the sensations, either the sensations of air at the nostrils or the feeling of movement in the chest and belly. Well, awareness of the breath is not meant to take us away from the broader awareness of body, but in a sense, just bringing the breath out forward as we can still be aware of the body, the whole body. We can just kind of relax with the flow, the rhythm, breathing in, breathing out. It's a simplifying. Where our minds tend to be busy and often have a sense of needing to do things, figure things out. Mindfulness of the breath invites us to let that all go for a little while. We can put it aside, we can pick it up later. For now, just letting yourself be with this simple experience. Breathing in and breathing out. It's natural that the mind wanders, that we fall back into thought, lose ourselves in thought. We don't turn this into a problem. Simply, when you notice that you're now in thought instead of with the breath, to gently come back, start again. And that starting again can include reconnecting with the body and settling the body as well. We're not trying to get somewhere or progress in our mindfulness. So going back to the beginning is not actually moving backward. If there are particular thoughts or themes in our thinking that are persistently carrying us away, we might turn toward them and just ask what's going on. And perhaps we already know something is on our minds. And it naturally arises during meditation as well. So as you breathe with awareness, you might sense what's the underlying feeling, the agitation or anxiety, whatever the emotion is, the name of it isn't so important. What is the feeling? If there's a feeling that's driving your thinking, as it often is. And again, not to analyze, but to just breathe with. So feeling the breath in the body and feeling feelings in the body, holding them together. The movement of breath, the opening of breath, the release of breath, all aiding in the release of these feelings and energies. Someone recently said that my bell wasn't very loud, and so I'm trying to hit it harder. Because there have been times when people are like, that bell's so loud, so I don't know. It's a good microphone. You can't see it because I keep it over here. But anyway, welcome everyone once again. And I see people, and but as I alluded to, I'm going on a self retreat, leaving today and finishing up on basically next Monday, but Tuesday morning officially, kind of when I return to this group, which the Airbnb will have to allow me to check out late, which is still a discussion. So I might be doing the class from my car at that point, but anyway, we'll be okay, I'm sure. But I've been going on retreats for a long time. I've went on my first retreat in Thanksgiving of 1980, and in the 80s, I got sober in 1985, so there were some ragged years in there. But almost every year, I managed to get on some kind of a retreat. Sometimes it would just be three days. Excuse me. But once I got sober and kind of got back into my Dharma practice about 35 years ago, for many years I would go on, group retreats, teacher-led retreats, 10 days, 2 weeks, a couple of month-longs. And but I always tried to make it once a year. There were times I would slip in like an extra short self-retreat and have two retreats in a year, but generally once a year. So over 45, 46 years, probably over 40 times I've been on retreat, and it's just always interesting that leading up to it, that I invariably feel some anxiety. And so I kind of wanted to pick that up as a like sort of a broader topic. I noticed about a week or so ago, I started feeling kind of a pull to to do more of a formal loving kindness meditation. And that kind of the phrases and the different categories of people, that many of you are aware of that form of practice. And generally, I don't do that form of practice these days. I mean, I don't work with a strict meditative form. I use different forms in response to intuitively responding to whatever is going on right now. And, as you become more experienced with practice, that's what I think is a natural thing to do. And I was kind of thinking about, oh, maybe I'll do this more formally on this retreat. And I picked out a neutral person who works at the bookstore up the street, which for fun, because it can be interesting to work with a neutral person and see them turn into something different, something other than neutral. They start to become a beloved person as we just keep sending them loving kindness. But what I was thinking about today, in connection with the kind of anxiety before a retreat, was like, yeah, of course, you're going to be, even if you're in a group, you're still alone with your own mind. And it made me think about the Metta Sutta, and the story behind the Metta Sutta, which is the Buddhist teaching on loving kindness, is supposedly a group of monks went off to do kind of a retreat together in a forest. And when they got there, as the, I think it's in the, I'm not sure if it's in a commentary or sutta, but the forest spirits, the tree spirits, didn't want them invading their space. And the tree spirits started set about to spook them. And they did this with various, like in the middle of the night, they'd start making spooky sounds. And they also had like stink bombs that they could make it really smelly. These tree spirits, man, they're very impish, and so pretty quickly the monks were like, I don't think this is a good place to meditate, and I don't know if they knew it was the tree spirits, but they knew it wasn't working. So they go back to the Buddha and say, like, that place you told us to go meditate, that didn't work out so well. You have another suggestion? And the Buddha's like, no, that's the place you need to go. But when you go there, if the tree spirits are upset, chant these words. And then he teaches them the Metta Sutta. And so they go back and they chant the Metta Sutta, and the tree spirits are pacified. And in fact, really enjoy it. And they're like, ooh, we love all this metta that they're sending us. And they wind up actually protecting the monks and guarding the perimeters of the forest that they're in. I've always kind of said that this was a metaphor, well, that it was showing that loving kindness was an antidote to fear. But then this morning, as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, well, the forest was their minds. They were going into their minds, and they got scared by their own minds. And that's what it's really about. And that's what I go through. And I've heard this from many other people. I don't feel that I'm, particularly flawed in my capacity to deal with the fear of entering into retreat. It's, I think, a normal thing. And that's what's scary, is that you're going into your own mind, right? And so I felt good about that insight. It's kind of like, it's only like one more step from how I already understood the sutta. that it was an antidote to fear, but realizing, oh, it's an antidote to fear of myself, you know. And indeed, people often talk about this. I mean, when you talk to people who've never been on a retreat, and you say, "Oh, I'm going on silent retreat." What people often will say is, "I could never be silent for a week. I could never not." But that's not really probably even what they are afraid of. They might, maybe they know it, or maybe they don't know, realize what they're afraid of is their own minds. And it makes me think then of, you know, there are 12-step sayings around this, you know, don't go in there. You know, it's a dangerous place to go into your mind. I can't remember that. Oh, Vicky, I can see you're saying it. What's the line?
Yeah, your mind is enemy territory.
Yeah, that's one, right? Yeah. And there's also the K radio K station KFUK, you know, that's in your own mind, you know. If you'll pardon the vulgarity. Yeah, it's so interesting that, you know, when you think about the things that you are afraid of in the world, like snakes and, you know, flying in planes, or, you know, heights, or enclosed places, you know, all these things. But what's our greatest fear? You know, or maybe, you know, our greatest fear is our own minds. I don't know. And what is it that we are afraid of? I'm just asking questions now. I don't have answers for any of these things. I'm just starting to. When we're afraid of our own minds, it's so interesting, isn't it? Like, well, if you've ever had a panic attack, and I'm imagining some of you have, or any kind of, let's just say, an anxiety attack. You know that it's a kind of feedback loop where there's a feeling that you have resistance to and that you're afraid of, and that the fear itself exacerbates the feeling, and it starts a feedback loop back and forth, and something has to break it. I feel like I'm talking myself into having a bad retreat here. Like, I need to talk myself into something positive. And well, I'll say I will. Let me turn toward the practice, which is, you know, so beautiful and simple. First of all, the practice of mindful breathing, you know, our number one meditation practice. First of all, it takes you out of your mind, you know. It takes you into your body. And by definition, if you are aware of the breath, your mind is in the present moment. Which sort of, you know, there's sort of an understanding that fears is rarely about, I mean, there's real fear of some danger that's happening right now, but the anxiety type of fear, the self-generated fear, is not really about anything in the present moment. It's sort of by its almost by definition a projection. So when we are mindful of the breath in the present moment, it can help us step out of fear. But further, the breath also, and this is not news, you know, has a mindfulness of breathing has a calming effect on the body, on the nervous system. And this is why mindful breathing is part of so many spiritual practices, particularly in pranayama, in yogic traditions. The breath is used very intentionally to arouse energy and to calm energy. So the, you know, something that we can, that I just find interesting is, our nervous system kind of has its own life, like our mind has its own life, like the Wes Disker's line about your mind has a mind of its own. Well, your nervous system has a mind of its own as well. That is, it's just kind of reacting and responding to stimuli and conditioning. And there's no direct like input to it from that we have. You can use drugs. That's probably the most direct input to your nervous system. But it turns out that the breath is actually like a backdoor way to navigate, and not just to navigate, but to affect the state of the nervous system. And it, I mean, I'm just, as I'm thinking about how that works, it's like, it's not just automatic. It requires intention. I don't know if many of you watched any of the NBA finals, but the French player, the 7 foot 4, 7 foot 5 player, Wembanyama, has apparently studied with some, I think they say Shaolin monks or something in Japan. And when he goes to the foul to take a foul shot, which is the only time when basketball players are still, which is the problem for them, because basketball is a game of flow, and many basketball players, they lose their flow when they're just standing on the foul line, ready to take a shot, a free throw. But he has a ritual. And again, I imagine some of you saw this. I hope so. It's just beautiful to watch him. He closes his eyes, he takes a breath, and then he lifts his shoulders and he lets his shoulders go. And it's very clearly him managing his nervous system, with his breath and with this intentionality with the body. So releasing, right? And then, but I was watching, and maybe I was projecting, but there was late in one of the games when there was a lot of pressure and things were moving really fast, when it looked to me like he only went through the ritual part of it, like he closed his eyes, took a breath, and but that he that like normally there was like an extra second or two when you could tell he was like really settling his mind. And this time it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to shoot, and he missed the free throw. And so that struck me as like, okay, right. It's not enough to go through the ritual. This is not a ritual. Meditation, although it has a form that's ritualistic, what makes it work is not the form. It is the intentionality in the heart of the form. And it is that intentionality to, in this, as I'm talking about, calm the nervous system, that has to be engaged. It's not enough to just go, okay, I'm just relaxing. No. There's got to be this, the mind engaging with the breath, with the body, that then engages the nervous system. And to tell you the truth, I am telling you all of this for myself. Because, as I said, I'm stepping into this place, and it's, you would think, well, Kevin Griffin, I mean, he's been meditating for 45 years. He's written all these books. He's a master Dharma teacher. I don't know if I'm that, but I like to, maybe borderline. Surely, when he goes on retreat, it's just one long period of bliss. Like he's just like the Buddha, he's just floating above the chair. I find it a little comforting that I heard Joseph Goldstein once say, and if you don't know who he is, he's one of the most respected and certainly a master Dharma teacher, one of the most respected insight meditation teachers, founder of Insight Meditation Society. I heard him in a talk say, whenever I go on retreat, the first couple of days, I'm saying to myself, I can't believe I actually teach this stuff. Because this is the odd thing about retreats, that there's this process. And sometimes I think of it as entering into a different body, because it feels like your body becomes a, it, after a few days on retreat, if you really settle in, it feels like you're in this different body, like the retreat body. It maybe it feels like you gained a few pounds, like you're heavier and things are more dense, or it can feel lighter too, different things. But those first, you never know how long that can be, and sometimes things don't click. But first, 24 to 48 hours, there can just be this real, generally what happens is a lot of sluggishness. Now I'm just talking about retreats, so some of you have not been on retreat, so and it's a good thing to be a little bit prepared for it, because when people go on their first retreat, if they don't have any idea what to expect, they can very easily think something's wrong, or that they're not doing it right, or that they need some guidance from the teacher to straighten out, because they know this shouldn't be happening. Which is, first of all, that like you're falling asleep, like every sitting, and then maybe you can't fall asleep when it's time to fall asleep. Or your body really hurts. Something you're finding new parts of your body to feel pain in. So it's a strange transition, and really, I've never heard anybody explain exactly why that happens. But when we slow down, when we stop being active, it just points to how much, again, our nervous system gets stimulated in our daily lives. And we're living in an era now where it's possible to sort of stay at least a mild state of stimulation through all your waking hours. And we get addicted to that. I mean, just one way of characterizing what goes on with phones, that we, if you start to feel nothing's happening when you're like in the doctor's waiting room, or you're waiting in line somewhere, it's like, oh, nothing's happening. Oh, wait. And out comes the phone, right? It's so interesting. I mean, I do it. I'm not going to pretend that I don't do it. Sometimes I don't do it. But it's very striking that we get to this place where we want constant input. And I would say, maybe this brings me back to my earlier theme, and I'll maybe wrap up that with this, that this is the same thing that we're afraid of going on retreat. We're afraid of our own mind. If we don't have something going on, I mean, people say, oh, I'm bored. But, there's this underlying fear of being alone with our own minds. So it's, what retreat does ultimately is it takes us into a world where we discover the beauty of our the beautiful potential of our own minds. And I think we all know this and sense this. And this one of the things that draws us to the Dharma or to any spiritual practice, when we read of, a spiritual teacher or a spiritual state, we're drawn to it. Whether it's peace or a feeling of compassion or love, joy. We hear these words and we maybe have images of, or, have heard stories of people having these experiences, and we all long for that. And when we spend a few days, and it doesn't take too long, meditating in an intensive way, we start to touch those places. And that then becomes incredibly inspiring, and all of the fears really fall away, and something else opens up, a great sense of connection. And now it's almost like flipped, and we just have this longing to stay with these states or to cultivate these states. And then people get addicted to the retreats and keep coming back. But ultimately, it's really precious, and to realize that there is this potential in our minds, and once we have touched it, and that we know it's there, that in itself offers something to us. We understand everything's impermanent. We can't stay in these states because these are states that we enter into, that we encounter. But we know that we have that potential, and it changes our view really of the human mind and human potential. So it certainly should be enough for this morning. I hope that's of some value, something I've said, and thank you for your attention, and happy to hear from anyone who wants to share anything or ask anything. Oh, there we go, Steve. Hi.
Well, I'm jealous and I envy you. And I am sure that on your trip up that you will be experiencing all of the different places that you are going to be entering into, and you will be walking amongst the trees of spirit. And when you were talking about the Buddha's monks going into the forest, and I could just picture you walking on these specific trails that I'm familiar with, and the mindset that you'll have. But just remember on your journey up that you'll have this anticipation of several hours of when you first land, what you're going to see, how you're going to feel, what you're going to smell, and you're going to land into a wonderful space. It won't take you very long. I know that. But I know what you're going to experience. So I'm just sharing that with you. And yeah, that being alone by yourself, I kind of was thinking about went on this retreat for a week in Denver, Colorado, and it was 1,800 people and all this crazy chaos and the noise, a lot of music. I'm going, I think I would much rather be going to where Kevin's going because that's something I really need to do is just to be alone and be quiet. So, I really am excited for you that you're going. I just wanted to share that with you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. I'm not actually staying at Sea Ranch. I'm going to Wallala, just past Sea Ranch. But I know you're
I've been there
from
many
a
times. Yeah,
yeah.
same thing. It's just the whole atmosphere up there. You're going to really love it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I've got the Great Disciples of the Buddha on my Audible that I'm going to listen to on the way up. So get myself going. John M. Hey.
Hey, Kevin. Good luck. I'm sure luck really isn't part of
Good luck.
it. I'm
Uh-oh.
sure
Do I need
safe
luck?
travels, whatever works.
Yeah, thank you.
My question is if you would be willing at some point to share how you conduct a
Yeah,
self-retreat,
I was thinking
or
about
is it
that,
just like
John.
what you do for a regular one?
Thank you for asking. Because I did think that might be worthy of mentioning. So, I mean, it's what I plan to do. I'm bringing food, so I'll be preparing my own meals. I'm not bringing prepared food because I like to just like first of all. Like I try to do hour-long meditations, but I've found that I need to have space in between them. And so ordinarily you do, an hour of sitting, then you'd maybe do an hour of walking meditation, which I will be doing. But then, I let meal times be fairly long, so I'll prepare the meal, eat. And then I'll go for a walk afterward, and sometimes I'll take long. Sometimes I'll take a 2 hour walk, so I'm not, following as strict a sitting form as you would on a, formal on a residential or community retreat, and it's. It's just kind of the rhythm that I've found works. Like I found that if I that lo longer sits, an hour minimum, like I kind of push myself in the sense that I sit with whatever is going on. I mean, it's really interesting, and again, people who are experienced with practice understand this, that developing concentration and really working. Sort of, I don't know how to the words to use, but kind of getting somewhere, deepening your practice. I find it benefits from making the sittings more difficult in the sense of stretching them out, and really like it's because it's the letting go of resistance, it's the letting go of aversion, it's the letting go of the resistance, the aversion to the any physical discomfort, letting go of frustration with like sleepiness or busy mind. It's all the letting go that kind of takes you in deeper. Now, I might be wrong. I mean, maybe it'd be better to do like, 30 tw 20 minute sittings in a day. I don't know. But it just seems that like when you stretch it and stretch your edges, that's where the kind of breakthroughs happen. And I know again there are people here who have done some long retreats, and you know how it's that somehow it's the difficulty of it, the challenge of it that kind of takes you further. I mean, it's somewhat like getting your body in shape. Like, if you're just lifting 1 pound weights, you're just not going to get build up a lot of muscle. So I kind of I on the one hand I push myself at the sittings, but then I leave a lot of space because what I don't like is sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk. When because then I'm losing inspiration, and I want it when I each time I sit, I want to be motivated. And if I'm like feeling like, oh, here's another sit, like it's getting kind of boring and repetitive, then it doesn't work as well. So I'd rather do like, 5 or 6 hour long sits in a day than 8 45-minute sits, if that makes any sense. I mean, now I'm just getting really into the weeds of it all, but that's kind of so and part of it for me. Like the cooking and cleaning is like doing normal things is grounding, first of all. And it helps me to stay grounded. And it also is a way of cultivating more mindfulness in my daily life when I come home, that I'm like, oh, I've been practicing cooking and cleaning on the retreat, and now I'm at home cooking and cleaning, and I try to carry on that spirit of mindfulness, not to the same degree that I do on retreat, but it certainly has infiltrated my daily life because of practicing that way. So that's something of how it that works. I mean, my wife asked me last night, "Are you gonna let yourself sleep in?" And she was saying that out of concern that I wouldn't get enough sleep. And my intention is to get up early, but not to get up too early, like that, because I know if I try to cut my sleep back to 5 hours, it's not really productive for me. On the other hand, if I'm just lying around, it feels really wasteful, to just like, I don't need to do like 9 hours of sleep. How much? So I'm kind of like, there's this way in which I do try to make it natural. Like, how much sleep do I need? Well, let me pay attention to how I'm feeling and see. So it is 11 o'clock.
It's very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. If there isn't another question, I will leave it at that. I appreciate you guys' support in all forms, especially spiritual support. And yeah, I appreciate the kind words today. And I won't pretend that, oh, I'm going on retreat for you, but partly I am. Ever since I started to teach, I felt more of a responsibility in my practice. I hope that this week will be of benefit to me and to all of you and to me, all beings, maybe, but at least to us. So, yeah.
Thank you, Kevin.
Take
Enjoy
care,
your
everybody.
time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Okay. Anybody who wants to say goodbye is welcome.
Thanks,
Bye,
Kevin.
Thanks. All
Thank you. Have a good
right,
retreat.
guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, Monica.
And if I change my mind and decide to just play golf all week,
Yeah.
don't worry.
Thank you.
Will you report back to us, please?
I will report back. Yes,
Thank
Charmaine.
you.
Absolutely.
Even if you play golf, you can let us know.
Yes, no, I have to
Okay.
be honest. I'm gonna,
Yeah, of
well, I
course.
mean, I am gonna play golf
Oh, good.
not
Good.
during the retreat, but at the beginning or the end, or maybe both.
A reward.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.